Morgan slept like a rock, and he had no idea how much time had passed when he gradually came to realize that there was light in the room again. He saw it even through his closed eyelids. With an effort, he pried his eyes open, squinting against the glare of a lantern held in Signora Lopez's hand as she stood beside the bed.
Colonel Black wishes for you to join him in the dining room, senor.
The kid sat up, and his stiff muscles protested. He hadn't had enough rest to make up for the punishment he had put his body through the past few days. He lifted a hand, rubbed his temples for a moment, then scrubbed his palms across his face. He shook his head in an attempt to dislodge some of the cobwebs. Then he looked up at Signora Lopez.
I'll be there in a moment.
In the dining room. And El Coronet does not like to be kept waiting.
The kid nodded.
Fine.
He swung his legs off the bed and reached for his boots. When Signora Lopez was gone, he noticed that someone had brought a basin and a pitcher of water into his room while he slept and placed them next to the candle. A frown creased his forehead. He didn't like the idea that he had slept so deeply people could waltz in and out of the room without him even knowing about it. The light from the Signora's lantern had woken him that time. Why hadn't it the time before? He put on his boots, then stood up and poured some water into the basin. Cupping his hands in it, he splashed the water on his face and rubbed it in vigorously. That refreshed him a little. A folded cloth lay on the table with the basin. He picked it up and dried his face. The faint whisper behind him made him whirl around. His hand dipped to the coiled gun belt on the chair and snatched the Colt from its holster. The kid faced the doorway with the leveled gun in his hand. His finger froze on the trigger. A woman stood just inside the door of the room, but it wasn't Signora Lopez. This one was considerably younger, no more than 20. The faint coppery tone of her skin, the high cheekbones, and the raven black hair that swept down over her shoulders like dark wings testified that she had Indian blood too, but her eyes were startlingly pale blue.
Oh, I'm sorry, senor. I did not mean to startle you.
The kid straightened and lowered his gun.
You did more than startle me, senorita. You almost got your head blown off.
You almost shot me?
That's right. Don't you see this gun?
Then he caught his breath as he realized that no, she didn't see it. Those striking blue eyes hadn't moved or reacted to anything since she came into the room. They just peered straight ahead tranquilly, sightlessly. She had heard him spin around and draw his gun.
You're blind.
Si, senor. My name is Elena. I brought you water. Do you require anything else?
She was used to getting around in pitch blackness. That was how she had been able to come into his room with the pitcher, basin, and cloth without waking him, he realized. She hadn't needed any light.
No. Gracias. Señorita, I'm fine.
She nodded. She was very beautiful, the kid thought, with striking features and a slender but well-curved body. The short-sleeved white blouse she wore was scooped low enough at the neck to reveal the upper swells of her breasts. Without saying anything else, she left the room. As the kid holstered his gun and then buckled on the gun belt, he thought about her gliding soundlessly around the outlaw stronghold, moving through the darkness like some sort of phantom. The thought was enough to make a little shiver go up his spine. The kid put on his hat, the black one with the silver conchos on the band that Glory Sheffield had picked out for him in Titusville, and shrugged into his coat. Even though it got as hot as hell's hinges in that part of Arizona, there in those chambers under tons of rock, the air was comfortably cool. As he emerged from his room, the kid turned and went to the corridor that led back to the dining room. Black, Devlin, and a couple of other members of the gang were seated at the table when the kid came in.
Lieutenant Morgan, you're late.
My apologies, sir.
Don't let it happen again.
Of course not, sir.
Black waved him into one of the empty chairs.
At ease, Lieutenant. Join us. Senora Lopez has prepared a meal for us. We'll eat, then discuss our plans.
The kid realized that he was ravenously hungry. He couldn't remember the last time he had eaten anything. He sat down.
Thank you, sir.
Signora Lopez came through a side door that probably led to the kitchen, followed by Elena. Both women carried platters of food, tortillas, mounds of scrambled eggs, a mixture of strips of beef and peppers and onions. The men helped themselves as soon as the platters were on the table, heaping eggs, beef, peppers, and onions onto the tortillas. The food smelled good, and the even more tantalizing aroma of coffee brewing came from the kitchen. Signora Lopez and Elena left and came back with the coffee pot and cups. The signora poured. The kid dug in and indulged his hearty appetite. The food was good, and the coffee with which he washed it down was even better. The food and drink began to make him feel human again, restoring some of the strength that the past few days had drained. The other two outlaws were Boyd Cranston and Micah Terhune, according to the introductions Colonel Black made. Both men were captains, like Devlin.
Lieutenant Morgan is going to serve as my aide-de-camp, gentlemen.
Terhune's eyes narrowed with suspicion as he looked across the table at the kid.
You're the feller who's on the train, aren't you? The one who was hell on wheels in that fight?
No offense, Captain, but when people shoot at me, I tend to shoot back.
That's a good answer, Micah. I wouldn't want a man in our outfit who wasn't ready for a fight.
Yeah, I guess.
The Colonel says Morgan's working with us now, and what the Colonel says goes.
Sure. I never figured otherwise.
Devlin turned to Black.
What's our next objective, Colonel?
We get to sit back and wait for the enemy to come to us for a change, gentlemen. Sheffield will want revenge for what we've done. We have something else he wants, too.
Cranston grinned. He was a tall, handsome man with a shock of blonde hair.
You're talking about the lady?
Black saluted Cranston with his coffee cup.
That's exactly right, Captain. By now, he's realized that Mrs. Sheffield is no longer in Titusville, and his first thought will be that we took her with us. He may even be able to locate witnesses who saw us riding out of town with her on Lieutenant Morgan's horse. Well, I imagine at this moment, he's frantically putting together a rescue party.
How's he gonna know where to look for her?
I'm coming to that, Captain.
Black looked up at the Major Domo, Lopez, who had entered the dining room and stood unobtrusively to one side with his hands clasped behind his back. The Colonel nodded to Lopez, who turned and left the room. Lopez came back a moment later with a man accompanying him. The newcomer was tall and skinny, with thinning hair and a prominent Adam's apple. He wore a brown tweed suit, and he looked familiar to the kid. It took a minute for him to recognize the man as the clerk in the mining company headquarters who had tried to stop him from entering Sheffield's private office. The man had a brown felt hat in his hands, and although he was clutching the hat nervously, he didn't really act like a prisoner, the kid thought.
Welcome, Mr. Dunbar. Would you like some coffee?
No, I'm fine. Colonel, just fine. I'd like to be done with this meeting so that I can get back to, Titusville.
What there is left of it, huh?
The mining company's office are largely intact, and the mine itself is still in operation. There's plenty of work to do.
The Gloriana Mine. Isn't that what Sheffield calls it now?
Yes, sir. He changed the name last year when he married the, current Mrs. Sheffield.
Of course.
Black waved at one of the vacant chairs.
Sit down, Mr. Dunbar.
The clerk looked like he didn't particularly want to, but he didn't argue. He pulled the chair back and sat down, perching on the edge of the seat with his hat on his lap. The kid wasn't really surprised to see Dunbar. He had already figured out that Black had spies working for him in both Bisbee and Titusville. Dunbar was obviously one of those spies. He had probably been feeding information to Black about ore shipments, as well as Sheffield's plans to visit the settlement and the Dragoons. Maybe Dunbar hated Edward Sheffield for some reason, or maybe it was just a matter of money. A lot of men would turn traitor if the price was right.
If you don't mind me asking, why did you summon me here, Colonel? It's a long ride from town, and as it is, I won't be able to get back there before dark.
Black got to his feet and began walking around the table.
I sent for you because I need you to deliver a message for me, Mr. Dunbar.
What sort of message? To who?
I think you know who the message is intended for. Your employer, of course. Your other employer, I should say. Edward Sheffield.
Dunbar nodded. He looked over his shoulder at Black, who had walked behind his chair.
All right. What is it you want me to tell him?
Actually, you won't be telling him anything. You're going to take a letter with a map to him.
I suppose I can do that.
I'm absolutely certain that you can, Mr. Dunbar.
With that, he pulled his saber from its scabbard with a smooth motion, grasped the weapon with both hands, and brought the razor-sharp blade around in a hard swing that buried it deep in the side of Dunbar's neck. Blood spurted across the table and the remains of the meal as Dunbar lurched violently forward in his chair. Devlin and Cranston sprang out of their chairs. The kid didn't move, his iron will holding him still. It was already too late for him to do anything for Dunbar. Colonel Black jerked the saber free. Dunbar thrashed around in his chair, pawing at the hideous wound in his neck as blood continued to gush from it. Black set himself and swung the saber again, This time, the keen edge of the blade caught Dunbar on the back of the neck and sank deep, grating against bone, as the impact of the blow knocked Dunbar forward onto the table. Black pulled the saber loose and raised it over his head, still holding it with both hands.
Hold still now.
Black chopped with the saber twice more, cutting through muscle and skin, and finally Dunbar's head rolled free of his body, which flopped backward into the chair and sat there, arms dangling at its sides, as more blood bubbled slowly from the severed neck.
Son of a bitch.
Blood had spattered all over the table in front of Dunbar's corpse, as well as the chair where his body sat and the floor around it. If the men across the table from him hadn't jumped back, it would have covered them too. As it was, this fancy dining room had taken on the look and smell of a charnel house. Black turned and held his crimson-smeared saber out to Lopez, who stepped forward and took it calmly.
Clean that.
Si, Colonel.
You have the papers I gave you earlier?
Of course.
Lopez produced them and handed them to Black. That would be the letter and the map the Colonel had mentioned a few minutes earlier before the slaughter began, the kid thought. Black rolled them up and inserted them into a small metal tube he took from his pocket. He screwed the cap onto the tube, then stepped over to the table and reached out to take hold of Dunbar's severed head. He turned it so that he could shove the metal tube into Dunbar's mouth, hammering it home with his fist.
There. It's much more efficient this way, I think. Lopez will place the head in a small crate, and you'll deliver it to Titusville, Captain Devlin.
Me?
Are you questioning my orders, Captain?
At that moment, Devlin, along with everybody else in the room, was probably thinking the same thing the kid was. How much like Satan himself Colonel Gideon Black had looked as he stood there chopping Dunbar's head off with a saber. With the blood flying and the insane gleam in his eyes, all Black had needed to complete the image were the flames of hell leaping up around him and giggling inhuman imps capering at his feet.
No, sir. I'm not questioning your orders at all. I'll sure take that box to Titusville for you. You want me to give it to Edward Sheffield?
No. No, you don't have to put it in Sheffield's hands yourself. You've been a fine second-in-command, Captain. I don't want to risk losing you. Just take the crate into town. Find someone who looks dependable. Pay them to deliver it to the mining company office. Well, I'm sure that's where Sheffield will be, if he's not out searching futilely for our trail, which he will never find without assistance.
Which we're going to give him?
Of course. We want Sheffield to come here. That's why I'm sending him the map.
But if he knows where we are, won't he just go to the law, or even the army, and get them to help him?
No, because my letter will make it clear to him that he will be under observation, and that if he involves any outsiders, he will never see his wife alive again. But once he sees that his faithful clerk Dunbar was actually working for me, well, he won't know who to trust. He'll see enemies everywhere. And that's exactly how I want him to feel. I want him to know that his wife is in the hands of a madman, and that the only possible way to save her is to do everything that I tell him exactly as I tell him. He's under my command now.
The kid felt a chill go through him as he listened to Black. He realized suddenly that the appalling display of violence he had just witnessed wasn't completely the act of a lunatic. Beheading Dunbar had been a calculated act on Black's part, intended to make Sheffield think that he was crazy. Of course, a man would really have to be loco to come up with something like that. Whether Black believed it was a pose or not, his insanity was the real thing. The kid thought he could risk a question.
What is it you're demanding of Sheffield, Colonel?
Black turned toward him.
That he bring me all the gold and silver ore currently on hand at the mine and at his offices. Also, that he sign over to me all of his mining, rail, and other financial interests. When he delivers the ore and those documents to me, I'll turn Gloriana over to him.
Do you really think he'll give up his entire fortune to save his wife?
Of course not. But he'll pretend to go along with me, thinking that he can double-cross me the same way he did before. He'll bring the papers with him. He may even give them to me. But then he'll try to kill me, and I'll kill him instead. And then Gloriana will be mine along with everything else he owns, just as I predicted.
That won't stand up in court.
Well, I believe it will, because there won't be any witnesses to claim that the transfers of ownership were coerced. Sheffield will be dead, so will any of those hired guns he brings with him.
What about people back in Titusville? Everybody in town will hear about that severed head with the note in its mouth. That note will be evidence, and so will the head itself.
I appreciate you playing devil's advocate, as it were, Lieutenant, but I assure you it's not necessary. I've considered every aspect of this strategy, and I'm confident of its success.
The kid realized then that he was looking at this all wrong. He was considering Black's plan from the standpoint of logic and reason, and those things no longer had any place in the Colonel's brain. Black believed it would work because he wanted it to work. That was all he needed. The kid glanced at the other men in the room. Devlin, Cranston, and Terhune had to have figured out for themselves by now that their leader was out of his mind. Why the hell were they going along with Black's crazy scheme? The answer burst on the kid's brain. The other members of the gang didn't care if Black's quest for vengeance on Edward Sheffield worked or not. They didn't give a damn about Sheffield or Glory. They had stolen several ore shipments from the train, and they had looted an entire town. They already had a fortune salted away somewhere in this stronghold. The only reason they were still playing along was because they wanted the rest of the ore. Once they had it, they would probably double-cross and abandon the Colonel. The kid couldn't bring himself to feel too bad about that. Whatever happened to Black, it wouldn't be as bad as what he should have coming to him. But the kid still had Glory's safety to think about, as well as his own. He had no doubt that Sheffield would show up with a small army of hired guns, led by Phil Bateman. Colonel Black was planning an ambush, but even so, there would still be fighting. Glory could get in the way of a stray bullet. There was also the risk that once Black was dead, his so-called soldiers would take off for the Tall and Uncut, taking Glory with them as a hostage. The kid wanted to prevent that. The best way for him to accomplish that goal, he realized, was to see to it that he and Glory got out of there before all hell broke loose. That was going to take some time and planning. It wouldn't be easy with that heavily guarded wall and gate, plus the whole gang being holed up in the compound. He and Glory couldn't just waltz out, the kid thought, nor could he shoot their way out against odds like that. They would need a distraction or another way to escape. Luckily, he had some time to work on the problem, as Black confirmed as he turned to Devlin.
It'll take you until sometime tonight to reach Titusville with your, delivery, Captain. Sheffield won't be able to gather his forces and get back here until late tomorrow afternoon, at the earliest. That'll give the men time to rest before the next engagement. Set up a guard schedule that takes that into account.
Yes, sir.
While you're gone, Captain Terhune, Captain Cranston, Lieutenant Morgan and I will work out the details of the reception we'll give to Sheffield and his men when they get here.
That was good news, the kid thought. If he knew the details of Black's plan, it would be easier to circumvent it.
On your way now, Captain. I wish I could be there to see Sheffield's face when he opens a package I'm sending him. I'm sure it will be a most pleasing reaction.
He looked around at the others.
For now, you're all dismissed.
Cranston and Terhune started toward the door. Just as the kid was about to follow them...
Oh, Lieutenant!
Sir?
I suspect you'd like to take a look around the compound. Don't be gone long, though. We got work to do this afternoon.
Yes, sir, Colonel.
He left the house under the cliff with Cranston and Terhune. But once they were outside in the compound, the two outlaws suddenly stopped and turned to face him. They didn't look too friendly. The kid glanced around. Some of the other members of the gang were converging on them, and he wondered if this had been planned, or if the other men sensed that something was about to happen and were simply curious.
Something wrong?
Yeah. You're what's wrong, Morgan. You come out of nowhere, you kill some of our partners, and now the boss makes you his aide? For God's sake, it ain't right!
You have to admit, it's a mite unusual, Morgan.
I figure the Colonel knows what he's doing. Anyway, he's in charge, isn't he? Like Devlin said, if Colonel Black wants us to work together, we need to work together.
Oh, we'll do what the Colonel says, I reckon. That doesn't mean we can't find out a little bit more about you.
What do you want to know?
Just what sort of hombre you are. We know everybody else in the bunch is plenty tough.
I don't need to remind you of what happened when you attacked the train.
That could have been luck. We have to be sure of you, Morgan.
How do you intend to go about that?
Before the kid could react, Terhune punched him in the face. The attack took Morgan by surprise. Self-preservation kicked in, and the kid lashed out with his left fist. His fist smashed into the middle of Terhune's face. Terhune lost control of himself and plunged forward, tripping and plowing up dirt with his face as he hit the ground. Suddenly, Cranston lunged at him, swinging a mallet-like fist. The kid tried to get out of the way, but was too late. Cranston's punch caught him in the jaw and sent him staggering back. The kid fought to keep his balance. Cranston rushed him, a confident grin on his handsome face as he threw another looping punch. The kid ducked under it, stepped in closer, and hooked a right into Cranston's belly. The kid hit him with a hard left to the heart. Cranston went down, landing hard on his back. When he tried to get up, the kid hit him again. And that time, Cranston stayed on the ground. The kid stood there and looked around at the other men, wondering if any of them were going to attack him next. Instead, he heard the sound of two hands clapping behind him. He turned and saw Colonel Black coming toward him, a smile on his face.
Excellent, Lieutenant. One of the best fights I've seen in a long time, and quite impressive. Well, you had a certain amount of luck on your side, I'd say, but no one defeats men as capable as Captains Terhune and Cranston solely by way of luck. Well, you handled yourself very well.
You set this up.
Well, I wanted to be sure that I had chosen correctly when I picked you to be my aide, yes. And the captains were more than happy to help me. They wanted to take your measure, Lieutenant. I dare say every man here felt the same way.
The kid glanced around, saw some of the other outlaws nodding.
And what's the decision?
Well, you're good enough to be one of us. Well, I didn't really doubt it, but it's nice to have my judgment confirmed.
Fine.
Why don't you come back inside? Dining room's been cleaned and returned to normal. I can have Senor Lopez make sure you don't have any cuts or scrapes that ought to be taken care of.
The kid started to shrug and insist that he was fine, but then he realized there was no point in such false bravado.
All right.
Black led him back into the house and turned him over to Senora Lopez, instructing her to tend the kid's injuries. She nodded stolidly and sat him down at the now empty dining room table. She went to the kitchen and Black left through the front of the house, which meant that the kid was alone in there for the moment. He didn't know how long Senora Lopez was going to be gone, but he thought he ought to take advantage of the opportunity to have a look around. He stood up and moved along the wall, running his hand over the adobe. Something about it struck him as wrong. A soft footstep just outside the room made him move back quickly to the chair where he had been sitting. Instead of Senora Lopez, Elena came into the room, carrying a tray with a basin of water and a cloth on it.
Senor Morgan?
Over here.
She smiled and started toward him.
I thought I heard you sit down.
She came to a stop in front of him and set the tray on the table just as easily as she would have if she could see.
Senora Lopez said you were injured.
Just a bruise and a scrape. It's nothing to worry about.
I will clean them.
She reached out and unerringly touched his face.
Let me feel you.
Her fingers were cool and smooth and soft, and as they moved over his face, the kid felt some of the tension draining from him. Even when she touched the sore spot, the hurt was a good one. Elena kept one hand on his face and used the other to get the cloth wet. She wiped it gently over his skin, which soothed him even more.
You are a good man, Senor Morgan. I can tell it from your face. What are you doing here with these monsters?
The kid was surprised that she would say such a thing. She didn't know him. For all she knew, he would tell Colonel Black what she had said, and she might be punished. She couldn't tell what kind of man he was just from touching his face. Could she? She leaned closer to him.
Help me. Help me get away from this place. Please, Senor Morgan. The men here, they are evil.
She wasn't telling him anything he didn't already know. But was she being truthful with him? Or was this just another test, like the attack on him by Cranston and Terhune? Was Colonel Black using Elena to find out if he could be trusted not to betray the gang? But as the kid looked up into Elena's sightless eyes, he knew he didn't have to worry about that. There was nothing on her face except fear, and perhaps a little hope. The kid had heard it said that the eyes were the windows to the soul, but even though Elena's eyes were blank, he could tell there was no treachery in her soul.
What do you want me to do?
Take me away from here. I will go with you. Do anything you want, if only you will take me away.
Her fingers grazed softly over his cheek.
I don't know how I can do that.
There is a way.
What way?
I can trust you? Aye, what a foolish question. I know I can trust you. Did I not feel it in your face?
Yes, Elena. You can trust me. I give you my word I won't betray anything you reveal to me.
In that case.
She set the damp cloth aside and held out her hand. The kid took it.
I will show you.
He stood up, and she led him over to the wall he'd been exploring earlier. His instincts had told him there was something unusual about it. Now he saw what it was as she felt along the wall until she came to one of the support beams. She rested the palm of her hand against it and pushed. The beam, to the kid's surprise, moved slightly. A section of the wall swung out an inch or so. Elena slid her fingers into the gap and opened the door even more.
There are stairs. They lead to the top of El Cornejo Rojo.
The kid leaned closer to the opening. The light from the lamps in the dining room penetrated far enough so that he could see a narrow staircase carved out of the stone of the cliff itself, spiraling up into the darkness. Excitement made his heart slug harder in his chest.
These stairs go all the way to the top, you say?
Sí. Many years ago, before the colonel and his men came, before even the Apaches came to this land, others lived here under the cliff, and they carved these steps so they would have a way to escape from their enemies if they needed to. In the end, it did not help. Those old ones are gone now, but the stairs remain.
She was right, the kid thought. The stairs had an air of antiquity about them, as if they had lurked there unseen behind the wall for centuries. He didn't know anything about those old ones she mentioned, but he felt a surge of gratitude toward them. The hidden stairs were just what he needed.
Do you know where Senora Sheffield is being held?
Senora Sheffield?
The red-haired woman. I'm sorry, I didn't think...
Do not worry, Senor Morgan. I have never had my sight, so I do not miss it. Are you talking about the Colonel's lady?
He'd like for her to be, but she's actually married to someone else.
I told you the Colonel was an evil man. He speaks well, but he does many terrible things.
Remembering what had happened to Dunbar earlier, the kid knew she sure as hell was right about that.
I know in which room the woman is being kept. Why do you need to know?
We have to take her with us.
Why? Is she something special to you, Senor Morgan?
Senora Sheffield is my friend. That's all.
Senora Lopez guards the other senora's room most of the time. You will have to do something with her. Kill her, perhaps. Senora Lopez can be very cruel to me sometimes. She beats me, and the senora comes.
The kid didn't hear anything, but he trusted Elena's hearing, which was keener than his. They both stepped away from the hidden door. Elena pushed it shut. It clicked into place just before Senora Lopez stepped into the dining room.
¿Por qué no estás atendiendo las heridas del señor Morgan?
That's right, Senora. I'm fine. Elena did a good job of taking care of me.
Senora Lopez continued to glare at the young woman. Even though Elena couldn't see that, the kid had a hunch she sensed it. She had a pretty good feel for most of Senora Lopez's moods and knew when to avoid her if possible. Senora Lopez snapped at Elena to go to the kitchen. Elena left the dining room, moving with an ease and assurance that made it difficult to remember that she was blind.
I'm going to my room to rest some more. Please let me know if Colonel Black requires my presence.
If the Colonel wants you, you will know. He will see to that.
The kid didn't doubt it. He went to his room, lit the candle, and closed the door behind him. He wished he'd had a chance to talk some more with Elena, so they could work out their plans. He also wished she had told him in which room Glory Sheffield was being held. Until he had that information, the kid had to rely on Elena. He still didn't think she had been trying to trick him, but he supposed time would tell about that. He was tired. He hadn't gotten enough rest before, and the fight with Cranston and Terhune had taken even more out of him. He stretched out on the bed, knowing that he was liable to doze off. He fell asleep even faster than he expected, almost as soon as his head hit the pillow. The last thing he thought about was the beautiful face of a blue-eyed blind girl. The kid's muscles were stiff when he woke up, but he didn't have any trouble moving around. He put on his hat and gun and went into the dining room. Glory was sitting at the table. She leaped to her feet and ran to him as soon as she saw him, practically throwing herself into his arms.
Kid! Oh, I didn't know where you were, and that horrible Indian woman won't tell me anything. Are you all right?
The kid put his hands on her shoulders and moved her back a little.
I'm fine, Glory. How about you?
I was able to sleep some. I didn't think I could possibly sleep in this awful place, but I did. Have you thought of some way to get us out of here?
Keep your voice down. Black's made me his aide. He expects your husband, along with Bateman and the rest of those hired guns, to get here late tomorrow sometime.
Oh, do we have to stay that long? Can't we try to escape now?
We'll get out. Don't worry about that. It might be better to wait until your husband gets here, though. Black will be more distracted that way.
Are you sure? If we stay here, there's no telling what he'll do. I know I tried to put a brave face on earlier, but I don't want to have to... Oh, to have to...
Maybe it won't come to that.
If we can get away before Edward gets here, maybe we can stop him before there's another battle. I can't let anything happen to Edward Kidd. I just can't.
No offense, but I didn't think you even liked him all that much, what with the way you've been trying to get me into your bed the past few days.
You don't know anything about it, Kidd. One thing doesn't necessarily have anything to do with the other, you know.
Yeah, that's not the way it's been in my experience.
Anyway, I can't let anything happen to Edward because we haven't been married for 18 months yet.
You have to be married that long before you get his money if anything happens to him.
That's right. He said he wasn't going to change his will until he was sure the marriage would last. Suspicious bastard. So you see, that's why we can't let him be killed. If you can get me out of this, Kidd, and destroy Gideon without Edward coming to any harm, I'll see to it that you're well rewarded. Financially, or any other way you'd like.
You don't give up easy, do you?
I never give up when there's something I want.
Glory's eyes suddenly darted to something behind him.
Kidd.
He turned and saw Elena coming into the room.
Senor Morgan?
I'm here, Elena.
And the Senora Sheffield?
Yes, she's here too.
Senora Lopez told me to find you. She said Colonel Black and his staff will be meeting here shortly.
Thank you. I'll just wait for them if that's all right.
I should take Senora Sheffield back to her room. She should not be wandering around. Senora Lopez would not be pleased.
Glory gave a defiant toss of her head that sent her red hair swirling around her face.
I don't give a damn whether that old hag is pleased or not.
Just go with Elena. I'll see you later.
She gave him a look. He saw desperation in her eyes. Don't forget, she mouthed. The two young women left the room, with Elena leading the way, even though she was blind. The kid sat down at the table. He thought about helping himself to a drink. The hour had to be getting late in the day. He decided to wait, figuring that Black would probably order Lopez to pour drinks all around once the meeting got underway. They would probably have dinner, too. The kid didn't have to wait long before Black, Cranston, and Terhune came in, accompanied by two more outlaws he hadn't met. Terhune's broken nose was swollen and ugly, but he didn't seem particularly angry at the kid.
Good fight, Morgan. I figured Cranston and me would stomp the hell out of you.
You were lucky.
Cranston seemed to hold more of a grudge than Terhune, although the only visible sign of injury he had was a bruise on his jaw where one of the kid's punches had landed.
Luck had nothing to do with it, Captain. I was watching. Lieutenant Morgan acquitted himself quite well.
Yeah, I guess.
Sit down, gentlemen. We have work to do. Morgan, this is Lieutenant Harkins and Lieutenant Brill.
The kid nodded to the other two outlaws. The men took their places around the table. Black stood at the head of the table and addressed them.
I have lookouts stationed between here and Titusville to keep watch for the approach of Edward Sheffield and his men. They'll send signals so that we'll have plenty of warning before the enemy arrives. Probably late in the day tomorrow. We'll position Mark's men around the gap at the entrance to the valley so that once Sheffield and his men are in our sights, they won't be able to retreat. I intend to allow Sheffield to approach the stronghold, but once my business with him is concluded, we shall open fire with cannon and rifles on his men and wipe them out. If any of them attempt to flee, the sharpshooters at the gap will cut them down. I want a clean sweep, gentlemen. No mercy, no quarter. Sheffield and all his men will die.
The colonel looked around the table.
Any questions?
No one spoke. Colonel Black might be loco, the kid thought, but unfortunately, the plan he had come up with to wipe out Sheffield and his hired gunfighters was a good one. It sounded like it would work.
Very well, then. I want suggestions as to how we can best deploy our forces. I want our 10 best rifle shots to close off the gap.
For the next few minutes, Black and the other outlaws hashed out the details of who would be posted where and what the signals would be to start the attack. As the colonel's aide, the kid would be at Black's side, of course. Black glanced at the kid.
You should be getting all this down.
Sorry, Colonel. I didn't realize I was supposed to take notes.
Well, as my aide, what did you think your job was?
When the meeting is over, I'll get paper and a pen from Lopez and write up a report while my memory is still fresh.
Well, that will be sufficient. But in the future, please be better prepared.
Yes, sir.
A few minutes later, Black told Lopez to bring in a bottle of wine and also to have dinner served. The kid had smelled some delicious aromas drifting out from the kitchen, and they reminded him that he still hadn't caught up on his eating. With the details of the plan worked out, Black picked up the wine glass Lopez had filled for him. The other men picked up their glasses as well.
If fortune smiles on us by this time tomorrow evening, Edward Sheffield will be dead, and all of us will be even wealthier than we are now. I won't forget the services that all you've rendered to our cause. To good fortune, gentlemen, and to the death of our enemies.
Once he had been dismissed and returned to his room, Morgan blew out the candle and waited in the darkness for an hour, until he thought it might be safe to do some prowling in the halls. He went to the door, listened intently, and didn't hear anyone moving around on the other side of it. The kid eased the door open and stepped into the corridor. Only a single candle was still lit, and it illuminated the hallway dimly. He wished he knew which room was Glory's, if indeed any of them were. It was possible she was being held in some other part of the semi-subterranean fortress. He cat-footed along the corridor, once again listening at doors and hearing nothing. He couldn't call out Glory's name, even softly, for fear that someone else might hear. It wouldn't do to be calling Glory's name through the door of Black's room. Frustrated, the kid turned toward the short hallway that led to the dining room. He stole along it through the shadows, and as he reached the opening into the dining room, he stopped short at the sight of a ghostly figure moving around in there. All he could see was a moving patch of white. The figure turned toward him and came closer, and he saw that it was Elena, wearing a long white gown. She must have sensed that someone was there because she stopped.
Kay?
It's me, Elena.
Señor Morgan!
She hurried to him.
Señor Morgan, I was about to come to your room. You must leave this place. I just overheard those Minterhune and Cranston talking to the colonel outside in the compound. They do not trust you. They are trying to persuade him that you should be made a prisoner and killed tomorrow along with the man Sheffield. I think the colonel is going to agree with them.
The kid bit back a curse. It looked like he was going to be rushed into action after all, whether he was prepared or not.
All right. You have to tell me where Signora Sheffield is being held. We'll get her and take her with us.
Why? That will just anger Colonel Black even more and make him pursue you and kill you.
I can't leave her here, Elena.
I heard you earlier today. I heard the two of you talking. She is more to you than a friend.
The kid's jaw tightened. Elena was jealous. That was just about the last thing in the world he needed.
Listen to me.
He reached out and rested his hands on her shoulders for emphasis.
Just because Signora Sheffield would like for there to be more between us doesn't mean that there is, or ever will be. I don't want her like that. I just want her to be safe.
You give me your word on this, Señor Morgan? Kid?
Of course.
You should feel proud of yourself, he thought. Leading on a blind girl so she would help him escape from a band of vicious outlaws. But she wanted to get away from them too, he reminded himself. More than likely, she had suffered at their hands, as well as at the hands of Señora Lopez.
All right. I will show you.
She took his hand and led him out of the dining room, through the door to the kitchen. Another passage branched off from it, and after a moment they were in almost utter darkness. The kid could barely make out the lightness of Elena's gown. She moved with easy confidence, completely at home in the darkness. After a few moments, the kid saw another patch of light ahead of them. They were reaching a turn in the tunnel. Elena paused and put her mouth close to his ear.
The colonel's quarters are back here, and so is the room where the signora is being kept. We must be very quiet. The colonel is not here. He is with his men in the compound. But Señora Lopez is here, and she has a gun.
The kid didn't like the sound of that. A gunshot would bring trouble in a hurry, and plenty of it.
I will tell her that the colonel is looking for her. You stay here. And when she comes around the corner, you can take hold of her and strangle her. Do not let her go until she's dead.
The casual way Elena said that made the kid's eyebrows rise in surprise. For all her gentleness, she could be ruthless too. He supposed she'd had to learn to be in order to survive.
Go ahead.
The kid had no intention of choking Señora Lopez to death, but Elena didn't have to know that. He put his back against the stone wall of the passage and waited while Elena's slippered feet whispered around the corner. He also heard Señora Lopez's footsteps, and they were much heavier than Elena's. The light grew brighter from the lantern she carried. The kid held his breath as she came around the corner. She stepped right past him without seeing him at first. Then she caught sight of him from the corner of her eye and turned toward him, her mouth opened to yell. It was a short, sharp punch with enough power behind it to stun the woman and make her eyes roll up in their sockets. The kid grabbed the lantern as it slid out of her hand. Señora Lopez fell to her knees and rolled onto her side. The kid placed the lantern on the floor of the tunnel and went to work swiftly. He tore strips of cloth from the woman's long skirt and used them to bind her wrist behind her back. He tied her ankles together as well to keep her from moving around. Then he used another piece of cloth as a gag, working it into her mouth and tying it into place with one of the strips. When he was finished, he lifted her and leaned her against the wall in a sitting position. Her eyelids flickered open, and she glared at him with murderous intensity as she made muffled sounds through the gag. The kid was glad he couldn't hear what she was saying to him. He slipped his Colt from its holster.
Settle down, or I'll tap you with the barrel of this gun and knock you out again.
She continued to glare at him, but at least she stopped making so much racket. He stepped around the corner where he could still keep an eye on her and motioned to Elena before he remembered that that didn't do a bit of good.
Elena, get Signora Sheffield, and let's get out of here.
For a moment, the girl didn't move, and the kid thought she might have changed her mind about taking Glory with them. But then Elena reached out and fumbled for a second with the door latch. Such awkwardness was unusual for her, but she probably hadn't had to unlock the door of a room where a prisoner was being held all that often, if ever. The latch slid back, and Elena opened the door.
Signora Sheffield, come. We must leave this place.
What's going on here?
The kid took a step along the hallway, past the corner.
Glory, come on. It's the kid.
Glory appeared in the doorway, wearing a green silk gown that Black must have had on hand for her. She stared at him.
Kid!
Glory and Elena hurried up behind the kid. He took hold of Glory's bare upper arm.
There's a way out of here. Elena will show you. I'll get some supplies together as quickly as I can and follow you. We'll meet on top of the Red Skull.
The what?
The big rock on top of the cliff. That's where the stairs come out. Wait for me there. But if you hear shooting down here, then the two of you get as far away from here as you can, as fast as you can. If you can figure out what direction Titusville is, head for it. Should run into Sheffield and his men on the way.
You mean you want us to leave you here, kid? I can't do that.
Nor can I, Signor.
Maybe you won't have to. Maybe we'll be lucky.
Glory threw her arms around the kid's neck in terror.
Oh my God! What was that?
Sounded like one of those cannons.
He disengaged himself from her frantic grip.
From the sound of the gunshots, I'd say the Colonel's found himself with a battle on his hands sooner than he expected.
But how?
The kid was convinced that Sheffield, Bateman, and the others had found Colonel Black's stronghold and launched a surprise attack on it in the middle of the night. That was the only explanation that made any sense.
We'll worry about that later. For now, I want you to get you and Elena to someplace safe. Elena, can you take Signora Sheffield up those stairs?
Si, Signor. You will come to us?
As soon as I can.
He picked up the lantern and hustled the two women along the hallway to the dining room, leaving the Indian woman where she was. The kid went to the section of wall where the door was hidden and pressed on the beam as he had seen Elena do earlier. The latch clicked, and the door popped open. He swung it back the rest of the way and handed the lantern to Glory.
I'll be along as soon as I can. Good luck.
Good luck to you, kid.
Elena hugged the kid.
Vaya con Dios, Señor Morgan.
Glory frowned at the embrace, then followed Elena up the stairs. The kid watched until they had made their first turn around the spiral and gone out of sight before he hurried toward the front of the stronghold. He had heard only one round from the cannon and was surprised that the other big guns hadn't been brought into action. Maybe the attackers had picked off the gunners and their steady fire was keeping any of the other outlaws from reaching the cannon. He was headed for the door leading into the compound when it burst open and the two Owl Hoot lieutenants named Harkins and Brill burst in, each with a gun in his hand.
Morgan! You seen that woman you brought in?
Mrs. Sheffield?
Yeah. The Colonel ordered me and Harkins to stay with her and watch over her to make sure that nothing happens to her.
What's going on out there?
Oh, hell's breaking loose. That's what's going on. Somebody snuck up on us and opened fire. Must be Sheffield and his men somehow.
The cannon by the South Guard Tower got one shot off, but then the fellow's man and it went down. And anytime somebody else tries to get to it, rifle fire forces them back.
Well, what about the other two cannon? Are they loaded?
Yeah, ready to fire. The men in those gun crews are dead, too, though. The sons of bitches got sharpshooters on top of the Red Skull. They swept the parapets clean. We have a few men left in the guard towers, but everybody else has had to hole up in the cabins.
What about the woman, damn it? You tell us where she is, Morgan.
Gone.
By now, Glory and Elena were probably halfway up the stairs. They would have a surprise waiting for them when they got to the top. Edward Sheffield himself might be up there, although the kid sort of doubted it. He figured the tycoon would hang back, out of the line of fire. Bateman might well be on top of the Red Skull, though, directing the attack on the outlaw stronghold. Harkins and Brill stared at the kid.
What do you mean, gone?
Escaped.
The hell you say? You let her go. I never did trust you, you son of a bitch. Cranston and Terhoon were trying to get the Colonel to kill you, and I reckon he should have.
We'll take care of that right now.
Their guns jerked up, but the kid was faster. The bullets smashed into the outlaws and drove them backwards with looks of shock and pain on their faces. They collapsed, their blood welling out onto the woven rug. The kid stepped forward and kicked the guns out of reach before they could try again to shoot him. Swiftly, with practiced ease, he thumbed 3 cartridges from the loops on his gun belt and replaced the 2 rounds he had just fired, plus slipping a bullet into the chamber he normally kept empty for the hammer to rest on. In the middle of this hornet's nest of enemies, he wanted a full deck from which to deal. Snapping the cylinder closed, he stepped past the 2 dead owl hoots and hurried to the door. He looked out, saw lanterns burning in the guard towers and casting their light across the compound. Muzzle flashes lit up the darkness like crimson flowers blooming in the shadows. Some of the men in the towers fired out into the valley where a frontal attack was going on, while others directed their fire toward the riflemen on top of the cliff. Other shots came from the cabins. The kid's gaze was drawn back to the cannon mounted in the center of the parapet, with bodies sprawled around it. Brill had said that the big gun by the south tower had been fired, which meant that the other 2 were still loaded, charged, and ready to wreak havoc.
Fall back! Fall back!
The shouted command came from Colonel Black, who led a retreat from the cabins. The outlaws charged out, firing as they ran toward the sanctuary under the cliff. Some of them fell, but most of them made it.
Colonel!
The men rushed into the stronghold.
Lieutenant Morgan!
Gideon Black had a bloody gash on his cheek where a bullet had grazed him, but other than that, he seemed unharmed.
What happened to Harkins and Brill?
A couple of stray bullets got them, right after they ran in here looking for Mrs. Sheffield.
He's lying. I bet he shot him.
He's a damn traitor.
If I was a traitor, Colonel, I wouldn't volunteer to go out there and touch off those cannon, now would I?
It's sure death to try for those cannons, Lieutenant.
I can do it. Just give me a chance.
If you were fast enough, you might be able to reach the parapet. Here, take the torch with you so you can fire the cannon as soon as you get there. But, Lieutenant, I don't think you'll survive this gallant effort.
Let me worry about that, Colonel.
All the kid really intended to do was get the hell out of there and reach Sheffield's forces. Then Bateman and the rest of the hired guns could finish off Black and his men. The kid had hoped to pull the trigger on the renegade Colonel himself so that he could see Black die for what he had done to the Williams family. But as long as Black was blown straight to hell, that was all that really mattered.
The cannons are lined up on the enemy forces. If you could manage to fire them both, that would blow holes in their line and we could launch a counterattack. You'd give us a chance at least, Lieutenant.
The kid nodded, eager to be gone from that den of snakes. He hoped that Gloria and Elena had reached the top of the stairs and would tell whoever was up there that he was on their side. Maybe they would hold their fire when they saw it was him making a break for it.
Godspeed, Lieutenant.
I still don't trust him.
The kid went to the door. Someone thrust a torch in his hand. He waited for a slight lull in the fire, then burst out into the compound, running for the wall as fast as he could. He planned to go up to the parapet and over the wall, figuring that would be faster and easier than opening the gate.
Don't shoot! It's the kid!
Bless her heart, he thought, as the shots suddenly died away. She had seen him from up there and recognized him. In the sudden silence, he reached the base of the stairs that led up to the parapet. Inside the stronghold, Colonel Black figured out what the ceasefire meant. The kid started up the stairs.
Hit him! Kill Morgan!
Shots started up from the house under the cliff. He reached the top of the stairs and lunged toward the wall. But shards of adobe flew into the air as a hail of slugs chewed up the top of it. If he tried to climb over, it would be sure death. Instead, the kid flung himself down into the closest cover, the narrow space between the cannon and the wall. He was pinned down, but at least the cannon and the carriage on which it rested provided some decent cover. Bullets ricocheted off the cannon's barrel and thudded into the carriage. The kid's eyes widened as the parapet suddenly shifted underneath him. The supports underneath the cannon had been hit by a lot of the bullets flying around, and the cannon was really heavy. The damage was causing the parapet to give way under the tremendous weight of the big gun.
Son of a...
The kid got out of the way before the parapet fell out from under him and the cannon with a splintering crash. The cannon leaned backward and toppled over, so that the barrel pointed straight up into the air for a second before it crashed on its side, pointing toward the cliff at a slight angle, the broken carriage and parapet wreckage underneath it. The kid landed on top of the cannon. He managed to hold on to the still burning torch. He saw Colonel Black step out of the stronghold, saber in hand. He twisted his neck to look up at the top of the cliff.
Gloriana! I did it all for you, Gloriana!
Then as the rest of the gang began to boil out behind him, Black swept the saber toward the kid.
Kill Morgan!
Not before I kill you first, you son of a bitch!
The kid jammed the torch against the touch hole of the cannon and threw himself desperately away from the big gun. As he hit the ground, the massive weapon's recoil made it lurch backward in the debris. Lying on his stomach, the kid watched as the heavy lead ball flew toward the stronghold, rising slightly as it traveled. It rose just enough to catch Colonel Gideon Black in the belly. The kid had killed quite a few men in a number of ways, but he had never blown a hole in anybody quite like the hole that cannonball blew through Black. For a second, the kid would have sworn he could look right through it and see the men standing behind the turret. Then the ball tore through them too and crashed into the stronghold with a tremendous impact that sent a cloud of dust and chunks of adobe and wood flying into the air. The kid looked up to the top of the cliff and saw Phil Bateman.
The gates, Morgan! Open the gates!
The kid scrambled to his feet and ran to the gate. The bar that held them closed was too heavy for one man to lift out of its brackets, but he was able to shove it enough so that it fell free at one end. The gates swung open, and some of Sheffield's men rushed through, firing toward the stronghold as they charged. The kid leaned against the adobe wall and watched as Bateman's men mopped up the last of the outlaws. The shooting didn't last long, only another minute or so. Then silence descended on the place once more. The kid stayed where he was until a buggy rolled through the now wide-open gates of the compound and came to a stop not far away. Elena climbed down from the vehicle awkwardly. Someone had draped a jacket around her over the nightgown she wore. She held out a hand.
Señor Morgan! Señor Morgan!
Here, Elena!
She ran toward the sound of his voice, the long white gown flowing around her legs as she hurried. She came into his outstretched arms and buried her face against his chest.
Señor Morgan, kid, you are all right?
I'll be fine.
He looked toward the buggy and saw Glory sitting there next to Sheffield. Someone had given her a coat, too, to cover up the skimpy gown she wore. She gave him a long, intense look, and he sensed that she was saying goodbye to him. She was reunited with her husband, and after a few months, she would be assured of someday being rich. The kid could have told her that having all the money in the world wasn't what it was made out to be. It couldn't bring back everything that was lost.
Kid, you saved us. You destroyed that monster, Colonel Black, and his men.
I had a lot of help, and a lot of luck, too. We're alive, and that's what matters.
Sheffield climbed down from the buggy and walked toward the kid and Elena.
Mr. Morgan, it seems I owe you a great deal. Mrs. Sheffield told me how you saved her life more than once.
The kid left an arm around Elena's shoulders as he turned to face the tycoon.
No offense, Sheffield, but you don't owe me a damn thing. I set out to kill Gideon Black, and I did.
A personal grudge?
You could call it that.
You never said anything.
It was my business.
Of course. But at the very least, you can accept my thanks. They're heartfelt, I assure you.
You're welcome. Just take care of that wife of yours. You might tell me how it is that you and Bateman showed up tonight instead of tomorrow when the Colonel was expecting you.
We were out searching for you and Gloriana, and we were only a few miles from here when we ran into a man heading for Titusville. He had a box with a rather grotesque item in it.
You figured out that Dunbar was one of Black's spies.
That's right. We had to kill the man who was carrying his head. He put up a fight instead of surrendering. Then we found Black's note and the map in the,
I know where they were.
At any rate, once we knew where the hideout was located, Mr. Bateman and I worked out a plan of attack, believing that we could take the outlaws by surprise by striking tonight. Clearly, it was successful.
Clearly.
It would have been much more difficult without your help, and there's no telling what might have happened to Gloriana in the fighting. As I said, I owe you. But never mind, we've been through that.
Yeah, we have.
I should get back to my wife. Thank you again, Mr. Morgan.
The kid didn't say anything as Sheffield returned to the buggy and climbed up next to Glory. Beside him, Elena tilted her head as if she were actually looking up at him.
Will you take me away from here, kid?
Where would you like to go?
Anywhere but here.
Sounds like a plan.
No one left until morning, though. By then, the bodies of the dead outlaws had been piled up like cordwood. There were too many of them to haul back to Titusville, and nobody wanted to bury them. Sheffield gave orders for the corpses to be taken into the wrecked stronghold under the cliff. Rocks were piled up in front of the openings, sealing off the place and its grisly contents. A few members of the gang had survived, along with Lopez and his wife. They would all be taken to Bisbee and turned over to territorial authorities. The kid commandeered a horse for Elena and some supplies for them. As they were getting ready to leave that morning, Phil Bateman sauntered over to where the kid was tightening the cinches on the buckskin saddle.
I had a hunch that before this was over, you and I would find out which of us is faster on the draw.
It'd be a shame if it had to come to that. This place has seen enough killing.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking the same thing. But maybe another place, another time.
If our trails happen to cross again.
Bateman nodded, touched a finger to the brim of his hat, and turned to walk away.
That man hates you, kid. I heard it in his voice. Why?
I don't know. Some men just have too much hate in them. It has to come out somewhere.
For a while, he had been that way himself, he thought.
All right. Let's go.
Glory had pointedly ignored him since the night before, and that was fine with the kid. As the group prepared to leave the outlaw stronghold, she sat in her husband's buggy, her face expressionless and her gaze directed straight ahead. But as the kid and Elena rode past, he saw her eyes flick toward him, just for a second, and he recognized the regret there. She might wind up rich, but she would pay a high price in doing so, and she knew it. They rode out through the open gates and turned east, while Sheffield, Glory, Bateman, and the others headed south toward Titusville. Their destinations were different. Their trails had parted. For Kid Morgan, it was a lonely trail, and always would be. He glanced over at Elena. She couldn't fill the void in his heart. No one ever would. But she could travel beside him for a while, until it was time for their trails to part as well. They rode toward the rising sun. The Loner, Book 4, The Big Gun Down, is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2011, J.A. Johnstone. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation, all rights reserved. Copyright 2011, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by Ken Jackson, Eric Messner, Katie Karkoff, Michael Glenn, Stephen Carpenter, Alexander Strain, Thomas Penny, Mort Shelby, Christopher Sheeran, Terrence Azelford, Richard Rowan, Dylan Lynch, Thomas Keegan, James Lewis, Drew Copus, Michael John Casey, Tim Carlin, Joe Brack, Colleen Delaney, Elizabeth Jernigan, Yasmin Toison, Nanette Savard, Lily Beacon, and Johann Detweiler. Additional red shirts by the Dead Giveaways. Directed by Nathaniel Perry. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Johann Detweiler. Book adaptation by Nathaniel Perry. The Loner theme was composed by Nathaniel Perry, with additional original music by Johann Detweiler and Nathaniel Perry. If you enjoyed The Loner, be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's The Last Gunfighter, available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our action-pumped titles, as well as free downloadable extras, forums, and podcasts. Keep listening for a preview of another Graphic Audio title.
Where'd he get him?
Before he passed out. Pearly said he got him twice. Once in the leg and once in the neck.
When Smoke's friend and longtime foreman Pearly is bitten by a deadly mountain rattler, Smoke must venture into a dodgy gold rush city known as Payday.
What's wrong with your friend? He shot or something?
No, he's been snake bit real bad. We came here looking for a doctor.
The nearest real doctor's up in Pueblo, about 50 miles from here.
Damn.
Hey, but we do got us a dentist, and he takes care of most of our doctoring when we need it.
But when Smoke gets Pearly, the only aid he can find, he crosses paths with someone from his past. Someone hell-bent on revenge.
How long you gonna let this Jensen thing distract you, Buck? Every day you sit around here messing around with this Pearly character trying to get to Jensen, we're losing money.
I'm gonna do whatever it takes to first make Jensen's life a living hell, Jeb, and then I'm gonna kill him. If you don't like it, there ain't nothing you can do about it.
But the only thing this oily varmint didn't count on was Smoke Jensen's boiling, unstoppable wrath.
Now, I don't know what you have against me, Tolliver, or why you've gone to so much trouble to hurt my friend, but I'll find out sooner or later, and we'll have a reckoning, you and me. You do know, don't you, Buck, that only one of us is leaving this town alive.
The streets run red in The Mountain Man number 32, Wrath of the Mountain Man. Available now in graphic audio. Available now in graphic audio. The war between Dante Valentine and the devil has been building.
Hey, Blondie, you two-faced lying sack of demon shit. You've got business with me first.
Indeed, I do!
Now, all will be settled in one epic final confrontation.
Here I stand, Lucifer, and not all the hosts of hell shall move me.
Not all the hosts of hell are necessary, Necromans.
Just one.
Dante Valentine number 5, To Hell and Back. The thrilling conclusion to the Dante Valentine series.
There is more than one way to break a human.
But with this much blaster fire and fresh blood in the air, you can bet your ass we'll soon have lots of company.
Maybe even some of those big Wendy's we've heard about that have invaded the desert from the far north.
Wendigos. They were just a myth in my time, but they're sure as hell real enough now.
Gaia, it's a bioweapon!
Hammer the bastard!
Fuck. Poisoned. The whole bastard lake was poisoned! Slavers. Nuking hell. The weapons are gone. If these fat fools had our rapid fires, they would have used them in the fight. Somebody else has our shit now. Just tell us where to find your son. He lives, you live, everybody wins. That's good biz. Deal?
No deal. Outlanders.
Oh, shit. What we do now?
First, we wreck this place to make sure it's empty. Next, we loot this place to the walls. Then we find that Vill Big Joe mentioned and start hunting for the Pig Iron Gang.
I can read it. I cracked their code. Greetings. My name is Mildred Wyatt. I am a physician and was cryogenically frozen in December 2000.
This is written by somebody who was frozen? A Freezy?
Blind NORAD, and we left her by the waterfall for Big Joe to sell to the slavers. A pre-dark healer. Ah, we could have gotten anything we wanted from a Baron for her. Any nuking thing we wanted.
Does the book tell the location of her cryo-whatever unit? That must have been where she got that implode granting those fancy blasters.
Not yet, but there's a map in the back of a place looks like a bomb shelter. A huge one, 5 stories deep, maybe more.
What do you think we'd find in that bomb shelter?
Our future. Bomb shelter, my ass. This is more like a pre-dark mill base.
Give us back our blasters and shit, and we'll let you walk out of here alive.
Come take it yourself.
Deathlands 98, Tainted Cascade. Available in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.